listening to the FASD Success Show with Jeff Noble. Welcome. This is part two, actually. So if you haven't listened to episode 107, make sure you do so, because we're talking to Jessica Birch, and she is an advocate and an adult on the spectrum. We covered her advocacy and her journey to get a diagnosis. In part two, we talk about her life after diagnosis. She gives us insight and how she copes with her symptoms and what you could do as a caregiver to help loved ones. We talk about interdependence, impulsivity, emotional regulation, expectations, struggles to be taken seriously as an advocate and to be accommodated, the importance of a diagnosis and consequences of not getting one. So if you haven't listened to the first episode, I suggest you do that, episode 107. But if you already have, let's get after it.
Welcome to the FASD Success Show, the only podcast where you can get real-world information about fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. This show will help you create calm in the chaos, have hope for the future, and more importantly, save your sanity so you don't lose your flipping mind. Now, here's your host, caregiver turned world FASD educator, Jeff Noble.
Yes, y'all. 8th grade, episode 108. Whether this is your first episode or your 108th episode, I am so thankful that you are spending this time with me. I get it. I get how hard it is to be a caregiver, and not only how hard it is, but how much time you don't get. So this fact that you spend it with me here today for this week, I really appreciate it. We have a great episode. It's actually a continuation of an episode, so that's pretty cool. Before we get into that, I got a couple things. First things first, if you dig what we're doing here at FASD Success, if you like the podcast, do me a favor, please subscribe. Helps us, helps you. It helps you because as soon as we drop a brand new episode, bam, it goes right to wherever you get the episodes. However you get your podcast, it'll show up. You don't have to go looking for us. Secondly, it helps us. It helps us when people are searching for FASD information, our podcast pops up. And so we are able to help more people. So it's a win-win, win for you, win for me. I really appreciate it. If you find yourself struggling and you are not part of our group yet, our free online Facebook group, can I also suggest you do that? You do not have to do this alone anymore. Parents and individuals on the spectrum are now the majority, right? With it being 2.5 times more prevalent than autism and, you know, the largest cause of developmental disabilities in the planet, then come hang with us at facebook.com/group/FASD forever. There's like 4,300 people in there. We got great moderators who are doing an excellent job trying to keep it as safe as possible. You ask a question, you get a ton of answers. That way you don't have to sit and wonder and sit and stew in negative thoughts. Nobody has time for that. Well, now that I said that piece, there's a couple things, okay? Hope you have a great weekend. I hope last week was cool. For me, last week was the very first time that I left my house, not like in general, but I flew. I was on an airplane, first time since the pandemic, and I went and did an in-person training in Winnipeg, an all-day training, and it was awesome. I was a little nervous because, hey, I hadn't flown in 2 years. I didn't know what it was like. It was a piece of cake. People were wearing masks, at least, you know, in Canada. It wasn't a big deal at all. Flying is still the same. It's not the best. It's not my favorite at all, but we do it. But it was so nice to see human beings. Now, the pandemic for me was not really a shift. It was just looking into a camera and doing like live Zooms with people. So I could still get the feeling of being in person. But man, being able to walk around the room and engage with people and stare at them right in the eyes, not creepy like, but just connect. I guess that's the key I'm looking for. To connect was excellent. That was fun to do. And then I was a little bit nervous because it had been so long since I did one. And how is it going to be? It's 2 years ago, but it was awesome. It was like riding a bike and just see the slides and get going. And it was awesome. So if you were at my session, thanks. It was all day and it was good. It was good to get out. It was like old times. It was like all of a sudden I went back into time pre-2020, and it just was like business as usual. So that's cool. It's awesome. And speaking of training, although in person is awesome, I don't mind digital at all. And you'll never guess what, folks. Listen to this, okay? Monday, May 30th. So 2022. Check when you're listening to this. 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Eastern, I'm going to be delivering the keys to FASD success, and I'm going to be bringing a buddy with me. His name is RJ Formanek. He is an individual, an adult on the spectrum who just gives such good insight, and it is actually sponsored by Mississauga of the Credit First Nation. That's what I'm talking about. So if on the 30th you want to come hang with me and RJ for a few hours, perhaps bring somebody or somebodies who really needs to hear the message about fetal alcohol, you can do that. I don't know the registration link. So best thing to do is if you want the link, just email me, jeff@fasdforever.com. Say, I want tickets. Give me damn tickets. I want. Sorry, I have a three-year-old. That's just how she talks. And then I'll send you the registration link and you could register and sign up and bring somebody with you or two people. All good, because our nice people like Laura Lee Kelly is her name and she is sponsoring this. So that's pretty fantastic. All right, moving on. This coming week, I'm like taking some time. Yes and no. It's been a long 6 months, so I'm going to go. I'm originally from just outside of Toronto in the greater Toronto area, and I am going to take a few days and go and visit some friends that I haven't seen since the pandemic, play some hockey, see my parents, all of that good stuff. But you're like, what do I care? Well, one, I'm practicing what I preach when it comes to respite and taking a break, and two, I am going to go and have a sit-down chat with Olga. If you're new here, just, I have buddies. I have a family, Olga, her husband Sergey, and their children, and they left Ukraine. I did a podcast about it. You should listen to that. And so I'm going to go meet them. I'm going to meet them on Thursday, record a podcast, like sit down. I don't think I've ever done that really before with people face-to-face, but it's them. They've immigrated to Canada. Just so kick-ass. I'm also going to give them the funds that you guys donated. So if you still are hearing this and there's still time before Thursday, go to buymeacoffee.com/FASDsuccess, and it'll say coffee's for Olga. And I'm going to take all that proceeds so we don't have to worry about anything in the back end. And I'm going to say, here are the funds from the community and from you, because they got to restart their life. And so we're going to listen to all of that. And I'm hoping, if I got the best team, that it's actually the next podcast. I'll just bump it up and we'll stick it in there. And so you can get an update on Olga and her family and all the things that they have endured and how much of an impact you as a community has made. So I know I went a little bit long-winded here, but let's get to part two, okay? If you listen to part one, Jessica Birch from Australia, individual on the spectrum, got her diagnosis. We talked about the journey getting a diagnosis, and now we're going to straight up talk about what it's like after. And if you listen to the intro that I did, we're going to touch on all sorts of cool stuff: interdependence, impulsivity, the importance of a diagnosis and consequences of not getting one, just what she is going through, where she's going. If you haven't kid on the spectrum, and you must listen to this because her advice is golden. Of course, at the interview, we'll come back, we'll chat about it. So I'm ready. Are you ready? Like, honestly, are you ready? Because it's fantastic. I'm ready. You're ready. Let's go. I want to talk to you right now about what supports you have in your life right now that make you successful. So I want to do that as much as you're willing to share, so that when people are listening to this, parents can get some ideas of what sort of supports. And we know everybody on the spectrum is different. We know that. However, we do know that a team is needed, right, in areas of weakness, so that you can focus on your strength, like right now. Because if you had to do a bunch of executive functioning tasks today, there would be no way that you'd have the energy to talk to me right now, right?
Exactly right.
Right. Exactly. So let's start with that. Okay. So I'll ask some questions, like, so your living situation right now, interdependently, independently, are you living with mom? What's going on?
So I would say that I have interdependent relationships,
yep.
But I do live on my, I don't live on my own. I'm sorry, but I do live independently. Like, I'm 2000 kilometers away from my mum.
Yeah.
And I live in Melbourne City. I have done for the last 12 years, I rent my own house, yeah. And I maintain my home. I have two other housemates that I rent my rooms to in my house. And but what I would say about that is that I have been incredibly lucky in the sense that very early on in my time in Melbourne, I found this private rental. I needed to move home from the original place I was living in. And I found this private rental and I was able to develop quite a good relationship with the owner of this house who also built the house. And so I don't deal with real estate agents. I have my property is rent controlled because of the relationship that I have. And it's afforded me like really stable housing.
That's excellent.
Yeah. Here's- and so that's not normal, you know?
Okay. So then your finances in terms, and we don't have to get into the nitty gritty, but well, here's what I'm thinking, because executive functioning is an issue, because impulse is an issue, right? What happens is our guys get either disability payments or support payments, and then
they spend all their money.
So does somebody manage that for you and then you have what's left over, or do you manage that all in yourself? Do you have a trustee, guardianship? Like who's your team member there?
Okay, so I do not have anyone who manages my money for me. Okay. I am a disability pensioner, and so I get regular payments and I am responsible for my money. However, I am very bad with my money. I do have a lot of issues with that. So yes, I am renting my own place and I pay my bills. I'm good at paying my bills because I really understand the consequence of not paying my bills, and a roof over my head is something that is very well ingrained in me.
Got it.
But however, so, you know, I'm able to manage my bills fairly well. I do have a tendency to forget bills, to pay them late, but they do get paid. I struggle very much with budgeting, and I do struggle with impulse buying. I do struggle with understanding the value.
That's abstract, right?
Yeah. So I do kind of go, oh, it's just $100. Oh, it's just this. Oh, it's just that. And funnily enough, even I was with my younger brother just the other day, and we were putting together the cost of something that I needed in the house. And I was like, oh yeah, that's fine. And he turned to me and he's like, Jessica, he's like, this is a lot of money.
So then you just go like, okay, I'm going to believe him because I have a relationship with him. He's got my best interest in mind. Is that like sort of your thinking when somebody gives you feedback like that?
I do defer a lot. Yeah. So I do.
Because that's a skill, Jessica, right? Because one of the things I hear from parents is that when the parent eventually finds out and then wants to make a shift and to help, the individual puts a kibosh on it because they've been told that in order to be successful, they have to do it all on their own, right?
Yes. And I truly believe that. Yeah.
And so how did you develop that skill by allowing others to, or at least accepting the feedback that they're giving you in terms of stuff where you struggle?
It depends what it is. So in a general way, I think that, and again, it's something that I had to come to terms with. So I had to reestablish that those ideas that it doesn't have to be on my own to be successful. And I can, support is okay. And, all of that sort of stuff, and the help is okay. So I definitely had to learn to be okay with needing and asking for help, because I thought that I was a failure if I couldn't do it on my own. So I do.
You're saying it depends what it is, right? You're saying depends what the advice is, whether you take it.
Yeah, pretty much. Like if it's something that I'm not ready in my mind to accept, or I don't feel like, I definitely have my moments where I'm like, well, I don't like that advice, or I don't want to take that. I don't want to do that.
Yeah. I hear that, man. That's character too, right? Like my wife is like that too. That's called stubborn, Jessica. There's nothing wrong with that. What about this?
But
okay, sorry.
But I want parents I want parents as well to know, or, you know, anyone listening to know who's caring for someone with FASD, is like, I don't have my money on lock. I do pay my bills and maintain a house over a roof over my head. I often run out of money, and it's because I do impulsively spend. I'm not very good at budgeting. I'm not very good at counting the values of the different amounts that I've spent and how it adds up. And so I have gotten myself into trouble many, many times with money, where I've completely run out of money and I've needed to have my mum bail me out and things like that. That has definitely happened. I'm definitely not perfect and have those struggles, but I have enough sense around my money to know that my bills need to be paid. I do have a very strong sense of the consequence of not paying my bills.
Yes. Fair. Yeah. Great answer. I appreciate that. So you have three mates going through the money issues, but still being strong enough to know that I got to pay my shit in order to live here, which is excellent, right? Now I'm wondering about, do you have a formal job now, or is it heavy into the advocacy stuff with the disability pension as your income?
Yeah. So I'm sort of trying to, I'm trying to hone my skills as an advocate, and I would really like to pursue that avenue. I think like that's a path for me.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. If it, we'd have words if you were like, no, you know what I think I'd do? I'd rather no. You are exactly in your wheelhouse. I have no doubt about that.
Thank you. I'm still dealing. Thank you. Yeah. That's what I really, what I hope to pursue. I don't have a formal job. Again, I struggle a lot with fatigue and stamina. Also the sensory things, and it's a little bit tricky for me as to what, if I was just to get like, you know, a job, what would be manageable and sustainable for me.
Yeah, true.
So I'm really trying to forge ahead with advocacy, because I feel like it's much more meaningful and something that I have felt very, again, like I said at the start, very compelled.
Yeah, man, you are sharing. Like, sharing like that is a skill. Opening yourself up is a skill. And just so many people are going to relate, not only parents, but I'm hoping, because also individuals on the spectrum listen to this podcast as well, because they write me, and it's awesome. So I want to ask another aspect. And one of the big things about FASD is emotional regulation, right? You talked about meltdowns. You said you're susceptible to those as well. And, you know, 3 years, man, that's still pretty young in the journey of understanding. So my question to you is, when you get frustrated, or you start to get overwhelmed, what sorts of things do you do? And that might not always work, but to sort of regulate yourself.
So I do. Yep. I definitely struggle with emotional regulation. And do you know what? My first port of call is aromatherapy. I use a lot of aromatherapy. I find it exceptionally effective. It's something that my mum put me on pretty early on. And I was very cynical of it. And I was very kind of like, oh yeah, some nice smells, like whatever, you know. I didn't really think much of it when mum said, you should try this. And then I started, you know, getting a collection of oils together and using them to help regulate my mood. And it works amazingly. I love aromatherapy. I even have my oils burning now to talk to you. And I use it. And like, I have oils that help me focus and help me do this. And like, some people will not go down that path. They'll go, oh, it's all airy fairy and stuff like that. I can tell you from my firsthand experience that this is an effective tool to help regulate. So what else do I do to regulate? Okay. So I'm someone now that has done lots and lots of therapy. And I do have a psychiatrist and a neuropsychologist and an art therapist that I get to speak to on a regular basis. And I feel like I have a really full gamut of sort of therapy styles as well. So I've done CBT, I've done ACT therapy, talk therapy, and then neuropsychological services, which are where she talks to me on a real practical solutions-based in a solutions-based way. Sometimes I really can't regulate and...
Do you take a walk? Like if you're feeling pissed off, do you take a walk? Do you listen to music? Do you...
I don't... Sometimes I listen to music. I have done that a little bit in the last couple of weeks in the past. But do you know what I do a lot, Jeff, is I forget... I actually forget what I enjoy and what I like. And especially if I'm a little bit frazzled in the moment, I can't think what it is that's going to make it better. Or I forget that I might like to listen to music and it doesn't even occur to me to turn it on. You know, things like that happen to me quite a lot where I'm like, oh yeah, this is a really nice experience. Why haven't I been doing this? And it's just because I almost forget like the reward. I forget how it feels. And so then the impetus is not there for me to do it.
Right. And in a brain way too, yeah. Right? When you're upset, yes. There's cortisol that you don't have access to your executive functioning.
Yeah.
So you go more limbic. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. No, you're right. And I was going to say, I'm just trying to think of all the ways that I do regulate. I do speak to mum a lot, like, and often my go-to if I'm really not like I've kind of tried to like sit out and be reflective or you know distract myself with a bit of gardening or you know have my aromatherapy, if none of that is really working and I'm just working myself up, I definitely will call mum and she is available to me often. She's a great, great support to me as well as my other family members. But of course I went through this journey with mum. So our bond only got closer through this process. So I will often go to mum and mum is fantastic in the sense that she is the one that has given me the language. You know, she's the one that's taught me predominantly about this disability and how it presents in me and how I can speak about it.
Yeah.
That was her. So when I am
shout out yeah, to Sue.
Yeah. And so when I am really dysregulated, you know, I do get on the phone with mum and go like, I can't deal. I'm not coping, you know, and I'm not regulated and I'm not this. And I think having this understanding has allowed and having the therapy that I've had has allowed me to give some space between the feelings and the outburst and the reaction. I'm definitely still have plenty of meltdowns, but I'm rightly or wrongly, or I am much, I can hide them from the public, if that makes sense.
No,
from my housemates, from people in the street. And what will happen though is like internally it's all going on, and then you know for the next couple of days I might be really off kilter or I might be short, and it does get me into trouble. It does cause issues where you know people think that I'm being difficult or people think I'm being a bitch but I've had all this other stuff happened for me and I'm trying to regulate on my own and without no real outlet for it, and it can be quite difficult. But I do feel just sitting in the knowledge of what's happening, understanding like and feeling and understanding that I'm getting more and more heightened and I'm more and more agitated, it doesn't stop me necessarily from being short with people, but it can stop like a full-blown meltdown where I fight with people
it goes real down off the rails, right? So you know it could be a little bit rocky, but it's you know the skill and the awareness and the understanding allows it from going to that. And you have coping skills, calling your mom, aromatherapy, so there's things. And it's got to be feeling better that you don't get mad at yourself like, oh, I'm an idiot, I'm so, because you know what's going on now. And first, you know, 30 years you thought the other way, right?
Absolutely. And just having the knowledge, just having that understanding, okay, or this is what happens, because and I have better skill. And again, I credit my mum's teaching and obviously the teaching that I've had from these wonderful mentors and clinicians.
Your mates in the house. So when you get short with people, Have you talked to them about the disability, or do you apologize? Like, what's, do they empathy up? Like, what's that dynamic like when you're having the, when you're struggling a little bit?
I do talk about the disability as much as I can, as much as people will listen.
Yeah.
And my housemates do know. However, I do feel, again, like coming back sort of to what we were speaking about earlier in my presentation, is that what I feel is that I'm still constantly in a battle. I do feel like I'm constantly needing to try and essentially justify and explain why I'm doing and behaving the way that I am. And what I'm finding often, just with like peers in general, is that it gets kind of dismissed. Like, what I'm saying, and I wonder about this about my advocacy as well, and it's sort of shooting me in the foot, but it just feels like it's almost like the fact that I can articulate what is going on negates it. So it's like the fact that I can say it means, and that I can say, oh, I'm just having a hard time because of this, this, and this. I mean, it might be like, and I transition quite poorly. My adaptive function is quite poor. And so I struggle and I get overwhelmed quite quickly. And I can struggle to, like, you know, I definitely struggle to transition and to initiate tasks. And so, you know, something in the house that I'm supposed to do and would take half an hour to do, it might not happen for 3 or 4 weeks because I can't get myself to do it. And for me, it's very clearly a problem with my executive function, but I still struggle to have people understand that it's not because I'm just some woman of leisure and it's not important to me to get done, or it's not this or it's not that. So yeah, I explain these concepts ad nauseum, or that's how it feels.
Yeah.
But I do feel like I struggle a lot, and I'm sad because it feels like the way I look and the way I speak is constantly taking away from that, and it's constantly undermining what the experience that I'm having is. And people don't want to give it to me. People don't want to give, oh yeah, I understand you have a brain injury. And you,
yeah, like accommodate you, right? Like, yeah, they feel like it's, yeah, almost then they're enabling you because the masking, right?
Yes, exactly. And so, for example, like, I'm constantly having this battle, and I know a lot of it is my own feelings about myself and having to understand that I did come from somewhere where I didn't have intervention, and I have trauma, you know, about these beliefs that I had about myself. So, you know, I must admit, in full disclosure, full honesty, is that I'm constantly battling with this idea that I'm not worthy of the support, you know, that I'm not worthy, that sure, I'm not fazzed enough to deserve the support. And then because it's reinforced, even with clinicians that know about FASD, it gets reinforced by, oh, you're so high functioning, you're so this, you're so that.
I hate that
which
word.
I hate it as well, which is an assumption. They're assuming, again, like, even people in the know, they're making this assumption about my capacity based on the fact that I wear nice clothes or that I've slicked my hair back. And it's, but the effort that's involved and the amount of support that I do have, and look, at the moment, and sorry, kind of probably why I've skirted around it, is because at the moment I'm trying to get supports back in place. So
yeah, like, they just won't give you the empathy and just like, yeah, cut me some slack. Like, I'm not doing this on purpose. Just like,
yeah. Well, what's happening is that instead of, what I feel is happening for me,
right,
that instead of me speaking to someone about FASD and what the issues are for me and saying, oh my God, like, acknowledging me and saying, oh my God, you must be working really hard, which I am, they say, oh, well, obviously it's just not that bad for you. So instead of like, actually, yeah. So it's instead of like this acknowledgement of, well, well, you must be working cognitively harder and physically harder, which it is. Like, my nervous system is working harder to sit here or in any situation to engage.
Is it accurate to say this, Jessica? And I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I always, because this is how I explain it to some parents. It's like going to school, a day of school is like working a double shift. I ask parents if they've ever worked a 12-hour workday. So similarly, you know, to present yourself for 2, 3, 4 hours to be holding on to you, that's working. That's like working 8, 9, 10 hours sometimes.
Absolutely. Yeah. It really is like that. Like, I need a break after, like, I'm tired and I stop being able to think clearly, and, you know, I'm not likely. And especially like I do hone in, I'm a bad multitasker. If I get, you know, involved in a task that takes me a long time, I won't eat, I won't drink, I forget to do this, all these other things. Like, I lose track of all these other things, and then I'm exhausted, but then I'm like behind, and like, you know, there's lots of barriers there, and me navigating those things, you know, and people perceive that I'm doing it really well has come through, I feel like, very hard lessons, very hard learning, a lot of like painful things in my life. And again, I'm not trying to be,
nobody's taking it. Your insight is incredible. Like, let me be the outside voice of saying, yeah, never shut up. Like, keep talking like this, because it'll matter to the people it matters to. Does that make sense? So moms and dads and individuals on the spectrum are eating this up, because you're relating. Listen, you're relating to them. You're also giving them hope. You might say, well, you know, I have my own place, but I'm shit with money, but my bills are still paid. The fact that you have a place gives parents so much hope, right? So let me give you permission to feel good about that success, because I know 100,000 parents who would take that. I don't care if my kids shit on money. They got a roof over their head. You know what?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. So yes, absolutely. Like, I do. Yes. And it is a win. And I'm so grateful for, oh my God, I'm so grateful for my secure housing every day. And it is like, but you know, I have secure housing, but I can't drive a car.
I understand.
And
you're saying, I agree with your side. You're saying, look, I'm presenting well, I'm on television and podcasts, and I do all this, and I know a lot, but man, I still struggle.
Yes.
And people sometimes don't take the struggle serious because of the way I look and talk.
Exactly. All the time. So, and even so much so that I've questioned whether or not I will be a good advocate, or that I should advocate, because I'm worried, you know. So like, something that I say, and I do a university presentation for a postgrad course to teach clinicians about diagnoses. So I do a little presentation in this section called like the ethical considerations for diagnosing adults. I like to speak well, you know, I like to be able to express myself and use the nice words and all that. Anyway, so I had done a radio interview a couple of years ago, and I used a script, and I often do prep a script because I lose track, like you just saw, and all of that stuff. Anyway, so I was campaigning for warning labels on alcohol bottles in Australia, pregnancy warning labels. And I did this radio interview, and I stumbled a number of times where I just had to repeat what I had said. You know, I just stumbled on my words a little bit. And I had asked, because I'm a bit of a perfectionist. And so I had asked for the ums and the ahs and the mistakes to be taken out. I wanted them out. I just didn't want them there. I wanted to be perfect, you know. And they left a couple of them in there, and then it aired. And it was a very well-known radio show. A lot of people would listen to it. And I got great feedback, and I'm happy with it. But I had these stumbling moments. And I was told, I was told during the editing process that they purposefully decided to leave those blunders in, because they didn't think that anyone would believe that I have a brain injury if they heard me speak. So they left those in. But I must admit, like, I was super triggered by that because, and so what I am hoping, and I guess I feel in my messaging is, and my advocacy is that, yes, I do understand that it's quite hidden for me, but I think it's, people need to understand that I'm not an anomaly. Like, I'm not somehow different to hundreds of thousands of people.
Right. There's more Jessicas.
Yeah, there are so many more people that are having my experience and have having a significant cognitive issues. Like, you don't get diagnosed in Australia unless you're two standard deviations below the mean. Like, you have to have significant impairment for the diagnosis. It's not. And obviously it's on a spectrum and there's lots of different, and the 10 different domains and all of that stuff. But I guess what my point is that I am a person with FASD, and therefore I present as a person with FASD, regardless of whether I speak well or not. And I guess I hope in my advocacy that it can be more that I can help people to see it, even when, you know, you have a person that has a good expressive language, you know, and yeah.
No, it's like you're being authentic and people love that. So
I'm telling you,
people are going to identify it with it way more because I try to be authentic. I have to be myself because I can't pretend to be somebody else because, again, it's exhausting and then I'll mess up somewhere. Right. So you might as well just get me right out of the gate. One of the things I do, Jessica, as an accommodation is before I do a training, I tell people, listen, sometimes I gap. And so I really need you to pay attention because I might ask you, what was I just talking about? And I'm telling that. And so, A, it makes them pay attention. And B, when I do gap, because I, like you, I used to panic, especially when I'd be in front of like 1,000 people doing a training. And then I'd be like, what the fuck was I just saying? Like, I have no
all
idea.
All this time. Oh my
gosh. I've done the training so many times. I'm like, did I already say this? Did I not say that? And then I start to get jumbled, or somebody's phone goes off and that's it, man. And
you're lost.
Yeah. So now my rule of thumb is like, as soon as someone's phone goes off, A, I start dancing to the ringtone, and then B, I say, where was I? And so then I just make it authentic that, you know, because sometimes I freaking don't remember. People will identify with you, dude. You are, I'm telling you, this podcast right now is going to be a home run because of your authenticness, because what you're telling people is like, look, I'm successful, but success doesn't mean perfection.
Yes. And it didn't, and it doesn't mean that I doing it on my own. And I think it's like I've had a lot of support in the last several years to get me back on track because I was really, like, life, I'm not convinced that I would be alive, you know. Like, I was in a really bad way. And I think that people, and when I talk about these things, when I talk about what was happening for me both physically and mentally and cognitively particularly during my 20s, like the decade of my 20s, I do get this, like, it's almost like this, you know, this eye roll, like, oh, you're so melodramatic kind of sort of feedback. And I'm not trying to be melodramatic. I'm not trying to do some sob story. What I'm telling you is like the power of diagnosis can do and the consequences of not recognizing this, of not diagnosing and knowing where I was at and what was happening to my body and what was happening to my mind and what I really loved as well, listening to your recent podcast with LaBelle.
Yeah, Dr. Catherine. Yeah.
Yeah. I was listening to that and I was so stoked to hear studies being done on low levels of alcohol consumption. Now, that's not necessarily my story. I had medium to high levels of exposure, but I'm constantly seeing and dealing with people who I feel are dealing with low levels of exposure in their lives or in the lives of people that they know. I mean, I'm not a doctor or a clinician by any stretch, you know, I can't say definitively, but just based on what I've learned. And I really have not had much sway in being able to speak to them on what low levels of alcohol consumption does. And yeah, I so loved that episode, and I loved it because as well, because what she talks about is that loss, like not being able to measure loss of potential and that idea about potential. And I feel like for me, I grieve that quite significantly. I think, you know, for myself, I look at, for example, my academia, like my time in school and how much better I could have performed and how outcomes could have been so different for me had I had a little support in that time and had I had an understanding, you know, or had I had help in my, like, you know, being able to relate to kids, had I been able to relate better, or had I, you know, I had dysmaturity as well, you know, I was advanced in certain areas, but then there was levels of dysmaturity that I had too, and I struggled, you know.
What if someone told you, okay, you could have a degree, like we could take away the loss of potential and you could rock your full potential, or this is going to happen to you and you're going to directly, by sharing your story, save 1,000 people's lives? Let me tell you again, what would you say to this? Because this is just hypothetical, right? Someone said, okay, we can give you back the loss of potential, like you could do your full potential. But by doing this, because the fact that you're speaking up about FASD, you're directly going to save 1,000 people's lives.
What would I say to that? I would say, bloody fantastic.
So as much as we like want to grieve, and it's true, like you're just speaking your truth and I freaking love it, but I'm also like, point, oh yeah, Jessica, well, here's a counterpoint, right? You might not even see it, but people are going to be listening to this, and this could be either an individual on the spectrum's moment or a parent's moment, just like your mom listened and watched the news, or their kid is now doing the research and is listening to this as part of the research as well.
Well, I mean, how do I feel about all that?
It's pretty badass, isn't it?
Yeah, it is really badass. And it makes me like, you know, I spent so much of my life feeling less than and feeling unworthy and feeling like I would never make a mark or leave a mark or have anything to offer. And I spent most of my like late teenage years and young adulthood thinking that I was completely unlikable, that no one wanted to hear me speak, that I had nothing good to say, and that, yeah, that I just was not worthy. Sure. And so to have this opportunity to speak to people such as yourself and to have a voice and to be heard is not only exceptionally validating and healing for me, like obviously it's not completely altruistic. It does fulfill a desire and a need for me to be seen and heard. But if that creates understanding for other people in their lives, in the sense of like what might be happening to them or what might be happening to a family member, or being able to sort of lift some of the shame or some of the sadness off their shoulders and sort of attribute it to where it should be attributed, which is FASD, which is this, you know, this pervasive brain injury that, you know, you don't have control over, and that there's tools and supports out there for you. I mean, they're not easy in Australia to access. I mean, it's an ongoing battle there, but if just sharing my experience allows that, and I know that a lot of people, you know, advocate in this way by sharing their experience and sharing their story, but truly, if it helps me sharing that pain or those successes and stuff like that, like, I want to do that, because I am still hearing stories. Like, I was going to this gym last year, and this young girl, 27 years old, she's heavily pregnant, she's having her baby, and we get into this conversation, and she asks me why I'm going to this gym, because this gym was for some, for people with chronic health issues, and most of the people that go to this gym are in their like 50s and 60s, right? So for all intents and purposes, I'm this young, healthy looking woman who's going to this gym. And so she asked me why I was there, and I told her why I was there and the issues that I was facing. And I told her that these were, this was because I was exposed to alcohol in utero and I have a brain injury. And so she's talking to me about that. And I said, look, the best thing that you can do and to know is that is not to drink during your pregnancy, that this is really damaging. And I could see on her face, I could see on her face that she had drunk alcohol. I could see just by the way that she responded to me that this was something that she had done. And it's not because it's willful or it's malicious, as we've talked about, you know, it's because they don't know. Because in Australia, they are not being given the information. And she went on to tell me that her GP had told her that it was okay to drink. So, you know, we have this problem in Australia where there is so much cognitive sort of bias around, and the way that we've been conditioned to include alcohol in all our sort of celebrations and, like, you know, sort of, you know, permeated throughout all aspects of society. And I know that's lots, many, many cultures are like that. But, you know, Australia, we have a very heavy drinking culture. And there's a lot of, yeah, there's a, like, there's a lot of cognitive dissonance around really looking at what alcohol does. And because there's been this perpetuation of misinformation, essentially, it's really hard to get people on the other side. It is especially really difficult to get people on the other side when I don't have MD in front of my name, and their doctors and their clinicians and their health professionals are telling them that they're okay, it's okay for them to drink. And then you've got this random girl who's talking about brain damage and saying, no, 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 don't drink. And they don't want to hear that. They don't want to hear that. But I'm hoping, I really hope there are definitely shifts and the changes, and the sort of FASD awareness movement is getting stronger and stronger in Australia. And I really hope to be a part of that in a real way, in a big way, because I think it's exceptionally important for our future and our health as a society that people understand this and understand what it does.
If you had a mic, you could just drop it right now. Bang. That's how good you did. Dude, earlier you were saying, you know, you were worried about not making a mark or leaving a mark. And my counterpoint to that is I would say that you already have. And it's just a matter of how many marks you're actually going to leave, Jessica. You are an amazing advocate. Do you know that it's already been 2 hours that we've been just shooting the breeze like this?
I know, and I couldn't believe it. And I wasn't expecting it. And I must admit, Jeff, just on a personal note, like, I'm really, like, pleased for it. And I feel like I've got plenty to say. And I've got lots of examples and I've got lots of stories. But I must admit, like, I struggle with the examples. Like, I have to write down the examples I want to share because I do forget them on call. And like real world, like, this happened and then this person said this and then this was the reaction and this is why and this is how I understood it, this was happening kind of thing.
Yeah.
I
only laughed because I thought you were going to say, Jeff, you know, real talk here, I thought you were going to be a stiff. I was waiting for that, and that's fine too.
No, not at all. I'm actually, like, I was really hoping because normally what I do is mentioned earlier is I write a script. Like, I get the questions, I want to know what I'm going to be asked, I want to think about what my message is, I want to think about, you know, who my audience might be and what, you know, would be best, like, I'm would be the best information for them to hear. But I think what has happened and the advice that I've gotten from pretty much everyone is that is just to talk and just to be myself and to not write the scripts, because they will get like, you know, more of my voice. And what I have felt recently, and I haven't spoken a lot about, is that I'm trying to find my own voice, in the sense that about how I want to relay these things. And I feel like I've been stiff, I'm stiff, and I'm scared about trolling, I'm scared about saying the wrong thing. I work very closely with a lot of wonderful advocates and people who had been advocating and working to bring FASD to light for 20, 30 odd years. And so who am I? So what I get very conscious, because I'm like, who am I to come in and maybe say some opinion about something that hasn't happened or is happening or something, not having the full picture of all the work that other advocates, other clinicians and researchers and social workers and all the rest are doing, and it's really off base. And so, and I don't want to undermine these people who have been working so hard for so long, and then I've just come on the scene and then I say my bit. So yeah, so I've been like,
the point, people are going to listen to this and hear that you are 100% authentic and you're going to give people hope. You know, that while symptoms will still persist, because this is an organic issue, that with support and time and maturity, you know, success is definitely possible. And you're just going to get better and better every time you do this. So like, oh my gosh, you killed it, man. Here's my final question. And I'm going to read something, the couple of sentences, because there is, you know, I help parents and it's really hard for parents and as it is for individuals on the spectrum, but I'm not going to say a name, but even because we have a closed group for parents where they can go facebook.com/group/FASD forever. And I'm just reading one of these. And I just wanted to know how you would respond to a parent who is struggling. So this person says, I'm at my wit's end. I love my kid, but right now I don't like anything about them. They are so mean to me and I am so tired of being called names. They say some real hurtful things. How do you continue with this? So what would so for parents listening to this who are having a real shit of a go with their kid right now, what would your message to them be?
Oh, I have been asked questions like this a lot, and I don't know if I answer in the best way.
Yeah, your way. What's your way? It's like in hindsight, looking back now, right? When you were a youngster, maybe saying this stuff, and maybe like you were saying earlier about talking to your mom and maybe saying some things you didn't mean. Like, what would you say to those parents?
Oh, yeah, I said really awful things to my mom. I've said horrendous things to my mother. Poor mum. I would say, you know, based on my own behavior in the past and, you know, the horrific things that I've screamed at my mother, I would say that, you know, the love is unconditional, and that I can look back on those things now and reflect on things that I've said to my mum and outbursts, and I feel deeply about those things. Like it's not lost on me that the things that I have said in the past have been deeply hurtful and have wounded her. I would say that a lot of the mean things that I said and did in my outbursts or meltdowns was truly because I was in pain. Like I really was like a sad kid, you know, and I think that, of course, that's really painful for parents to see, because parents absolutely don't want their children to be in pain, to be hurt, to be isolated, to be ostracized. I would say that, what do I think? Like, again, like no one knew that I had FASD when I was a kid. And so I was naturally accommodated because mum sort of saw my quirks and accommodated a lot of them, but there are a lot of things that weren't accommodated. And I think what I've been asked, what I felt would be helpful, or what the difference would be for me had I known that I had FASD when I was a kid. And I guess what I would say about that, or to any parent, is teach them the language. I can't teach them the language to express themselves. So obviously it's pretty hard. You can't do that when they're heightened or when they're in the middle of a meltdown and they're screaming and throwing things around and all of that. But in those moments of calm, in those moments of when they're receptive, teach them the language. And by that I mean, you know, say, hey, you know, if when they're in a time that they can reflect or you can engage with them, I would absolutely encourage the parent to say, well, we had this situation or this thing happened the other day and it felt to me like this was happening for you. And, you know, do you know how you feel about those? I felt like, and give them words. And not only like for me, that was exceptionally helpful. I think that would have been exceptionally helpful. But, and I know it depends on their developmental level, how you engage with them, of course, and how, what type of words you use. But I think also what would have been really helpful for me, maybe when I was a little bit of an older child, like, you know, 10 and up, is being taught about the mechanisms in the brain. And I think even as an adult and learning about what the brain is actually doing and how it's interpreting the information, like getting it broken down to me like that, because basically I would have very long conversations with my mum. And again, of course, I did this as an adult, so it's a bit different. But I would have very, very long conversations with my mum about the mechanism. So we would talk about a real world situation that happened, something that happened, you know, where I kind of arced up or I was agitated or things like that. And we'd break it down and say, well, this is what I think your brain was doing. This is what I think was happening in your brain, because we were at a pub and there was lots of noise happening and this was happening. And then someone said this thing to you, but you didn't quite hear it. And then you got agitated because of this, because all these other things were going on. So having it broken down to me in like almost like really layman's ways and in a real like almost clinical like and practical way,
yeah,
was exceptionally helpful for me. And it created a lot of understanding, because then I could separate the behavior from as well from my feelings. So it was like, I'm having a sensory overload, and the sensory overload is going to make me behave these ways. And having just that breakdown was exceptionally helpful. And I must admit that I have seen some parents who just don't, and maybe it's fatigue and it's all these things, but they're not actually saying, when they have a chance to talk to their kid, they're not actually explaining to their kid what is happening for them.
Right.
I must admit, like, I sometimes I'm a bit nervous to say stuff like that, because I do understand that the level of cognition and, like, you know, it's a spectrum, and some children will not be able to comprehend what you're saying.
Yeah,
but I think putting little bits in about the mechanism rather than it being about their behavior or their reaction, but being about the mechanisms that happen to create that reaction, was exceptionally helpful for me.
Oh, so good, dude. Yeah. Dude, it's so good what you're saying. Absolutely. Listen, here's my favorite part of my podcast, the segment. It's called the Shameless Self-Promotion Segment. Where can people follow you, Jessica Burge? Where can people, you know what's going on with you, what you're doing? Where are you hanging out these days?
All right. So I have a Twitter page, and at the moment it's really the only social media that I am doing. And my Twitter handle is JBTalksFazD. And again, I must admit that I do lack routine around posting, and I lack executive function around that. So I don't post all the time, but you can see me there and follow me. And I do post great information about FASD, and I hope to do more in the future, along with my own website, where I hope to sort of blog and podcast and talk, you know, all JB Talks FASD.
Oh, cool. You want to do a podcast?
I do want to do
a podcast. Oh, yeah, right on.
Yeah, just little ones, like little snippets. So
yeah, man. Yeah, there's all different forms of podcasts. I think that would be great. Will you come back on and do this again? You said you had more stories, right?
I've got so many stories. And if you want to chat, like, I'm so happy to chat about, like, I've got heaps of, you know, experiences during school life and, you know, just trying to socialize as an adult and, you know, what happens for me if I walk into a pub and I'm trying to talk in a group and, you know, just like lots of.
I love it. I love it. I have no doubt. So you'll come back and do this again.
Yeah, for sure.
Awesome. Absolutely. Awesome, dude. Listen, I will stop here because we've gone over 2 hours, which is great.
Yeah.
Which is it's good. No, the episode's as long as it needs to be. And I have no doubt people are going to eat everything up that you're saying. Parents want to hear from adults. Mm-hmm. End of story. Right. And so you're going to help parents lessen the learning curve, build deeper relationships with their kids, see a hopeful future, know they have to get a team in place, and putting in all the work that Sue has done with you and yourself, you know, has, even though the work still goes on, FASD isn't a life sentence.
Exactly.
It doesn't define you, who you are as Jessica Birch. It's a part of you. It is not you. And I just think that's something special. And I just have to say, I'm so glad that you're on our team. I think you're going to be an excellent asset to the FASD community. And I can't
Thank you so much, dude.
I can't wait to see all the kick-ass things you do. So thanks for doing the show, buddy. I appreciate it.
Oh, no stress at all. And I've had such a really wonderful time. And thank you for speaking to me. Thank you for reaching out to have me on your show. And I definitely hope to do it again and kind of, you know, like watch this space. I'm coming for you.
Come get me, man. There's so much room for all of us. There's so much room for all of us because FASD is so prevalent. Yeah. You know, so there's nothing wrong with people having my show and your show on their podcast playlist, is there?
No, I hope I can really help. I want to help.
You already are. So like that cat's out of the bag right now. It's all about just about honing your message and getting out in front of the people as much as you can.
Yeah.
And I have no doubt you're going to do it just because how far you've come already. So just keep up the hard work. Okay.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Oh my goodness. Jessica Birch, honestly, that was one of the most insightful interviews I had done. Hands down, you've given people great pause and lots to chew on. So there's a few things. There's more than a few things, but I'm going to go through it as fast as I can because I want to make sure that we get it and you get it and that information is sunk in. So thanks for hanging with me at the end here. So I ask her, what supports does she have in her life to be successful? She considers her living situation as interdependent. She's been living in a house for 4 years with two mates. It's a private rental. She's got a great relationship with the landlord. So take note of that for your kids, and you're going to be the one probably who starts to build the relationships. She's very lucky to have stable housing, stable placement, number one success factor. And we talked about finances. She doesn't have anyone that manages her money, and she straight up says, I'm bad with money. A lot of individuals are bad with money. Money is abstract. Value is abstract. A lot of our guys have trouble with math, putting things like the internal condition, right? Putting that together. A lot of math is abstract like that. What did she say, though? She said that she is good at paying her bills and she understands the consequences of not having a roof over her head. They may even get paid late, but she isn't good at budgeting or understanding what value is. And she gave those examples of people that she's close to. She says she defers to experience of people she trusts. So kudos to the people in her life that she feels good enough to go and talk to. That is huge. That's why relationship is king here. She had to learn to be okay with needing and asking for help because I thought I was a failure if I couldn't do it on my own. Okay, even just play this part for your kids. If you're an individual on the spectrum listening to this, do you want to just save so much trouble in your life? It's okay to ask people for help. And I'm even talking to you as a caregiver too, if you're listening. It is okay to ask people for help, 100%. What did she ask about a job? To finish that thought off, that she thought she was a failure if she couldn't do it on your own. You are so successful. by asking other people, because we can't do it on our own. Nobody can. Her job, she spoke about trying to hone her skills as an advocate. She feels compelled to do this work, and it's meaningful. She's doing exactly what she needs to be doing. She says she still struggles with stamina and sensory fatigue, big time. And we don't realize it, but we are getting inundated with sensory information all the time. And if your ability to process isn't as good as somebody else's, you're just using all that energy to silently regulate. But then I asked her about emotional regulation. I said, what do you do to regulate yourself? Aromatherapy works for her, exceptionally effective. Different strokes for different folks. You got to find out what works for your guys. I didn't think much of it when her mom said she should try it, but it works amazingly. She finds it effective and a tool to regulate. Done lots of therapy, art, CBT, talk, neuropsych, which is practical based solutions. And sometimes she can't regulate. And I forget what I enjoy and like, especially in the moment. So when you are overwhelmed and you are in your fight or flight, you can't recall your short-term memory, use your executive functioning. She also talks to her mom a lot, and she still does have meltdowns. She can hide them from the public. Internally, it's all going on. It's all happening. So the next couple days, it even takes her, she might be off kilter, as she says, and people misunderstand. But sitting in the knowledge and understanding, it doesn't stop her from being short, but it stops her from having full meltdowns. Yeah. And then I asked her about her roommates. She says, I still feel like I'm constantly in a battle to justify what I'm doing or behaving the way I am. What I'm finding is often with peers, it's general. It gets dismissed. It feels like the fact that I can articulate what's going on negates it. The fact that I can say it, I struggle to have people understand, because she's so expressive and articulate, and people take people at face value and words value instead of brain value. You believe them. Believe them. She says something awesome here. She says, the way I look and speak undermines the experience I am having. People don't want to give it to me. Like, people don't want to accommodate her. She feels like I'm not FASD enough. I'm not worthy of the support. And it even gets reinforced by clinicians. Even people in the know are making assumptions based on the fact that I wear nice clothes, that I've slicked back my hair, the effort that's involved and the amount of support I do have. Instead of me speaking to someone about FASD and saying what the issues are for me and acknowledging me and saying, oh my God, you must be working really hard, because she is, right? People don't take her seriously because she's put together. But the amount of work, she says, in order to put together is outstanding. And then I talk about the presentation she made, and she was forgetting or having to go back to remember, and they left all the blunders in. And as you could see or hear in the interview, as we go on, she's obviously getting tired. And so these same mistakes are happening, and they're not even a mistake. It's fatigue. It's fatigue. And so be on a lookout for your kiddos with fatigue. Please be on the lookout for that. And it'll sound like not remembering. It'll sound like getting things mixed up. It's fatigue. There was a lot of awesome things, but I just want to read this quote that she said. I spent so much of my life feeling less than and unworthy, and feeling like I would never make a mark or leave a mark or have anything to offer. I spent most of my life thinking that I was completely unlikable, that no one wanted to hear me speak, that I had nothing good to say, and that I was not worthy. So to have this opportunity to speak and to have a voice and to be heard is not only exceptionally validating and healing for me, if it creates an understanding for people in their lives to lift some of the shame or sadness off their shoulders and attribute it to where it should be attributed to, which is FASD, that there are tools and supports out there to help you, I think great. If just sharing my experience allows it, if it helps, I want to do that. And you can't stop doing it. You can't stop doing this, Jessica. This is where you need to be. And this was excellent. These two parts were excellent. Knowing where your kids are coming from is such a tool, really stopping and thinking of all that they're going through and that they're struggling with. And oftentimes we get upset because we're scared. We're scared and we don't know how to help them. But first thing you could do by helping them is understanding them. Understand them, build a relationship with them, and you will go far. And let them know it's okay to get help. Let them know by showing that you're going to get help for yourself, whether it be that you might need therapy or you are modeling by saying no, saying no to things that are going to burn you out, saying no to things that are going to stretch you thin, saying no so you can have more space to decompress and say yes to the people that matter. You matter. And I know it might be hard sometimes when you're sitting there and you were just called a pile of names, or, you know, maybe verbally assaulted, physically, member safety first. But you're just in this space where you don't think things are going to get better. Nobody listens to you. Nobody understands. That is not true. That is not true. Don't raise your voice. Improve your argument. Keep learning. Keep learning. Stay motivated. Stay hungry. This is a long game. This is a long game to create success for individuals with FASD and to create success for yourself. So does that mean some of your plans have to change? Absolutely. And that sucks. And that's sad. And we have to grieve those losses. And we have to come up with new hopes and dreams. But I'm telling you, once you do that, you keep your just nose to the grindstone and you grind and grind and grind and grind, it will be worth it. You know, your kiddos won't be statistics. They can be successful. And the same goes with you. And you can still have a retirement and you could still go on a vacation and not take your kids at the end of the day. You could still have all that. You really can. But it starts by understanding that individuals on the spectrum are not trying to ruin your day. They're not being assholes on purpose. They are struggling. And in order to make them successful, we have to really understand who they are as human beings, how the symptoms of the disability affect their ability to navigate the day-to-day life, and to help them provide accommodations. Either when they're young, you can implement them, or when they're older, you could guide them and let them know it's okay to get help. It's okay, because we're all successful when we get the help and the accommodations and the support we need, so we can spend more freaking time kicking ass and doing the things that we were meant to be doing. Because you want to be mom, you want to be dad, you do not want to be social worker, you don't want to be this, that, and the other thing. So outsource that shit and just build relationships with your kids. If there's anything else that you do, that's what I'm talking about. Anyways, this has gone on way too long. Remember, May 30th, you want to come hang out with me, jeff@fasdforever.com, and just say, hey, I want them tickets, bro. And then I will send you the link. I will send you the link. It might not be that second, but I will stop and check my messages and emails while I'm away. It's respite day. Going to spend some time with my family. Okay, having said that, I love your freaking face. Hopefully next week we got Olga in the house and you can hear the update and all the things that are happening with her and her family and their loved ones on the spectrum. So until then, keep grinding. I love you. I really do. I really appreciate that you listened to this. And if you're listening to this right now, fuck, you're awesome. Kick some fucking ass this week. All right, talk later. Bye.